Hey, music makers. Today's episode is sponsored by Caulfield Cables, an awesome boutique family-owned business out of California making high-quality, high-fidelity, and beautiful instrument cables. They can do all kinds of custom orders, whatever you need, and they're happy to announce the launch of their new HD series of cable. If you saw our giveaway a couple weeks ago, you saw this beautiful cable that's made with Summer Spirit LLX, has the flexibility and durability you need, as well as the distinction of being the lowest capacitance cable on the market, keeping your signal clear at an amazing 15.8 picofarad per feet. It's perfect for work in the studio or on the stage, and combined with the colors that they're known for, you'll have a cable that will stand out from everything else. So be sure to check out Caulfield Cables. Their info is in the show notes for their website and their Instagram page. And give them a shout, send them some Make More Music family love, tell them that Chris sent you. All right, on with the show. Hey, music makers, welcome back to Make More Music, the podcast that connects you to music and one another. My name is Chris. I'm a board-certified music therapist, and if you're new here, I interview all kinds of different music professionals to show you how people in a wide variety of career paths make a living in their passion. So how's it going, y'all? What have you been doing passing the time in all this coronavirus stuff that's going on? I am finally returning. As you hear this, I'm probably in the office starting to feel things out, see how I can start scheduling again and doing things not all on the internet. So I'm excited for that. My wife and I have been passing the time. We've been watching the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. I had not seen most of them somehow. So my favorites are still Guardians of the Galaxy. We're on Thor Ragnarok right now, so we're getting close to the end. So write in, tell me your favorite. I think the Guardians of the Galaxy are my favorite, but and I can't stand Captain America. Does anybody else actually like Captain America? Real question. Okay. Other than that, let's get on to the interview for today. I've got a sweet interview with a friend, a mentor of mine, Larry Tran. He is the music director at Southeast Christian Church, which also happens to be my church. And it is the fourth largest church in the U.S., and he is doing the kind of worship leader music directing. So he plays the guitar, he talks in the talkback microphone, he creates all the tracks, and he talks about creativity, he talks about finding his own voice and mentoring other people, and it's a good chat. Larry is a funny guy. He is always entertaining, and he's got some really cool perspectives, and he's very down to earth. So I think you'll enjoy this chat. Without further ado, here is Larry Tran of Southeast Christian Church on Make More Music. All right, Larry, we're rolling.
Yeah.
This took us a long time
to
get to here.
I know, too long. We live in the same city, which is very sad.
I know, yeah, but it's just like, literally, I don't know, we were planning back as far as like February, and then the world ended.
Yes, yes. So kind of scary, kind of interesting times for sure, to say the least.
So before we get into everything you do with Southeast and your cool backstory and all the stuff, I know I want to get into the sync licensing a little bit too.
Okay,
people will find that interesting.
Yeah.
You ready to do a couple of rapid fire?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. First, whatever on your phone or media player or whatever, what's the last track you listened to?
I listened to this guy named Toby, and I don't know his last name. It's kind of a rap gospel guy. Let me see. I can pull it up real quick.
I like where this is going.
It's really funny. It's guy. His last name is N-G-I-W or G-W-E. I don't know how you say that. You say that.
Nwigwe?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. But he has a song.
Where's he from?
That, I don't know. He has a single that just came out called Try Jesus. And he's talking about how you can try Jesus, but you can't try me because I'll throw fists. It's a pretty funny. It's humorous. It's awesome though.
That's good though.
So check out that track if you're listening to this. It's pretty awesome, and the music video that goes along with it is pretty awesome.
When I was in Orlando working at the hospital,
that one song by, I can't remember her last name. She's the Mary girl, Erica.
Yeah.
It was like, I love God. Yeah. I love God. That was really popular.
Yeah.
Cool. So next, you can be as specific or as, I don't know, esoteric as you want to be.
Okay.
But if you were an instrument, what would you be?
Ooh.
Be as philosophical or as plain as you want to take it?
Well, I play multiple instruments. So I play the piano and guitar and can play bass and can stumble my way through some, you know, derivative instruments of those main instruments, like a mandolin, a banjo, organ.
Get by.
Yeah, I can get by on a lot of these instruments. But I've never gotten into wind instruments. So like if I could go back till when I was 15 or whatever and start learning how to play the sax, like the sax would be. And so I'd like to say sax because, you know, it's smooth and, you know, it gets the people going.
It's cool.
Yeah. And I would just go around everywhere, just bust it out. And
Careless Whisper.
Yeah, exactly.
Any point. That's good.
Awesome.
Trumpet was my first instrument. And I don't know, it was like a year or two ago at Christmas, I played just because my trumpet was there.
Yeah.
And just not playing. I can not play guitar for a month and be fine. You know, my fingers might hurt if I played for hours. Yeah. But trumpet, it's like 5 minutes. It feels like you've been punched in the mouth. You have to play every day to keep the embouchure going. Cool.
For sure.
In kind of all the craziness, and now that the church has been transitioning back to in person.
Yeah.
What is something that's been inspiring you recently? Doesn't have to be music related at all.
Ooh. That's kind of a tough question. Here's one. I was very, very inspired by that documentary, The Last Dance.
Yes.
I don't know if you got to watch that.
I haven't watched it yet.
It was like a 5-week Sunday nights for 2 hours documentary.
It's the Bulls, right?
Yes, the Bulls. It's Michael Jordan's his sixth year, but they pretty much document all the way back from his first year. They specifically do his last year, but that was very, very inspiring. All the stuff that Michael Jordan went through and actually a lot of his teammates and just how driven Michael Jordan was, you know, and obviously we know that he's the GOAT and, you know, there might not ever be anyone that surpasses him. And so just to see how much drive he had, that was killer.
I laughed really hard when I was in college. It was when he had that big 50th birthday celebration on ESPN. Yeah. Uh-huh. And my friends and I left and were like, ESPN is treating this like no one has ever turned 50 years old before. Like it was like 3 weeks of Michael Jordan.
Yep.
No, but Space Jam.
Oh,
that was like,
oh, yeah, man.
I had that lucky coin that came with the VHS for like, that was like how I made decisions for like a solid year of my life.
Sure.
Is it Bugs Bunny or is it
for
Michael?
Sure.
Cool. Sure. I feel like you're bound to have something awesome for this. What this, again, can be anything in life.
Sure.
Something you want to bless somebody and tell them, a pro tip or a hack that you practice that they need to know about.
In music or just in life?
Could be anything. I've had somebody tell me how to keep their takeout warm in the car on the way home.
Okay.
Seat warmer.
Okay. A pro tip.
Music's fine too, though, if you want to stick to that.
I think a pro tip that I have really developed in the last couple of years as a musician is maybe just a little bit more confidence.
Mm.
And so I've kind of come to this conclusion that everybody is going to sound different. Like you as a guitar player and me as a guitar player or even a piano player, we could plug into the exact same pedal board, same amp, same guitar, but your fingers are going to sound different than mine.
The touch,
The touch, the calluses on your fingers might make it sound darker or brighter. There's just so many how you hit your strings with your pick. Just so many different factors on how. And so I think the comparison game is terrible for musicians because we're always comparing ourselves to another musician when really, and you should just be the best. I should be the best Larry Tran I can be.
Yeah.
And you should be the best Chris that you can be.
Because nobody can beat those.
Exactly. And you can get inspiration from a lot of other guitar players. Like obviously I'm a worship guitar player. So I draw inspiration from a lot of the, you know, worship guitar players, but at the same time, I think in the last couple of years, I've been like, well, I'm going to kind of try to put my own spin on stuff. And because you, like I said, you could buy all the guitar pedals that those guys have, all the amps, and you're still not going to sound the same just because, and neither, I don't think you should strive to or want to. I think everybody, especially musicians, should try to find their own voice, and that would be my advice.
What's some of the like rubber meet the road, like the some of the nitty gritty of the things you had to learn, or maybe some of the style that you've developed? I know you like to sneak the slide in a lot. That's always really cool. What are some other things?
I mean, I wish I was the one that came up with that. There's a lot of guys that I've been able to play with, not to name drop or anything, but I've played with James Duke in the past and a lot of these other good worship guitar players that, you know, you just kind of, I saw James do it first and I was like, man, I really love that. So I've adopted that. But, you know, like I said, I put my own spin, try to put my own spin on things. I think I've always, I can't remember who taught me this, or there's a couple small like studio tricks that you can do as a guitar player. Like if you're always playing 10 gauge strings, if you, when you're going to record and track on a, like an album or something, go up a gauge, like 11, and you'll be more in tune because I don't know what's, you're just not put, you're so used to the 10s that whenever you're playing the
11s, compensating a little too
hard. And always tune on the side of, like, if you're tuning, tune on the side of flat just a hair, because with a guitar you can always kind of push up just a little bit, but it's hard if you're too sharp to come down.
Especially in open position area.
Exactly. So in a lot of my guitars have a Bigsby on it or something like that, so I'll be able to hit a note and then either pull up or pull down on that Bigsby for that last note or whatever, just to get it nice and in tune. What's some other tricks I've learned? I don't know. There's just I've learned a couple years ago to try to play with the tuner always on, and so when you're playing a line, you can see. If you're hitting that note, if you're flat or sharp, I do a good bit of studio stuff. And so I'm very, very, anal about like intonation and, you know, making sure that each note is in tune, unless it's purposely, you know, a bend or something like that.
Characteristics.
And also playing with a slide, when I was a early slide player, you know, I would way too fast, way too sharp, and then have to come back. Whereas, like, you can kind of follow your tuner while you're sliding up to notes, and you know where to stop.
You can literally watch the strobe.
You can literally watch the strobe. Yeah. So it's just little hacks like that are awesome little tricks that I don't think younger players know right off the bat. But if they heard it, they'd be like, "Oh wow, okay, well, that's a lot easier if you can just like kind of cheat when it comes to a couple of these things." You know?
Yeah, I don't know if you watch that guy on YouTube, Adam Neely. Do you know him?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I really liked, he was talking about, he had a whole episode on sampling, and the icon for the episode was, is using samples cheating? And it just had a big no. He said, because music is not a sport. And I was like, dude.
Yeah.
So many people need to hear that. Like, so many people need, it's like, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Like, I still think it's funny, like, now that I'm learning more studio stuff and, you know, taking audio engineering and stuff, it's funny now seeing how Auto-Tune and Melodyne work and like how funny it is that, you know, people are like, oh, I don't use it. It's like, this thing is supposed to last forever. Do you want it to sound like crap? Like, do you really want this to sound terrible?
For sure.
Like, it's not a live performance that happens once.
Right.
This is a recording that's meant to stay.
Right.
So.
Right. And there's also some cool studio tech. I'm not saying that everything has to be perfectly in tune.
No.
Because there's been time where when I've played a guitar line and then gone back and kind of pulled on my strings just a little bit, just to get them a little bit flat, then I'll play that same riff on top of the perfectly in tune one. and it just makes this huge wide sound.
Yeah,
it's like
yeah.
a natural the modulation.
Double track.
Yeah, yeah, double yeah. track it. And I can't remember. I think it was a ZZ Top or something like that that yeah. actually did that trick. And I tried it once and I was like, man, this is awesome. Also, like doubling stuff with like a baritone. Or something like that.
Something
of
a very
awesome.
Different color.
Yes, yeah. exactly.
Leave it to Billy Gibbons, man. It's always sure. Billy Gibbons.
Always Billy Gibbons.
It's always. Yeah. Cool. Let's go. That was supposed to be a rapid fire. Here's a fun next one. You're going to have a good one for me. What's a go-to junk food?
Ooh. I'm a big Twix guy. It's
oh,
weird. Yeah.
Nice.
I like Twix a lot. I also like gummy bears a whole lot.
Any brand? I know that's like a
yeah.
People are loyalists to certain
yeah,
gummy
I
bears.
I kind of like the really really cheap ones because they're a little chewier to me.
Yeah.
You can get those like fancy Haribo like German
I like
ones.
Those.
But I feel like you got to chew on them for like 5 minutes before they break down. Yeah, you know, yeah. And like my jaw will hurt if you eat
yeah,
the whole bag.
Yeah.
Not endorsing eating the whole bag. But if you were to do that,
but if you just
really
stare
really,
at the clock yeah. and eat a whole bag, you know it
exactly.
happens sometimes.
Exactly.
That's good. That's good. Lastly, anybody, a person, a project, or an organization that you think is doing cool stuff that deserves a shout out right now?
One of our guys here, a worship leader, he's a volunteer worship leader. His name is Sam Woodbury, but he goes by the same stage name, Sam Wilco. And he was actually on The Voice this past season, and he's going to be putting out some original music. He's kind of been doing some covers on the internet and stuff like that. But I can see him going and doing some really cool stuff lately. He's doing some original stuff. That's
great.
Awesome.
We'll have to link to some of that stuff.
Yeah,
that'd be awesome.
Sure.
That's good. Well, let's go back to the very beginning to some of your first musical memories as a little guy.
Yeah.
What made you even interested in music and who were your early influences and what instruments were you learning and stuff like that growing up?
That's hilarious. So I know your viewers can't see me, but I am an Asian American.
You outed yourself.
Yeah, I did. For sure. But I was born in Miami, which is a crazy place to be born and like grow up because it's such a melting pot of like different ethnic. Mm-hmm. Like I remember growing up and there was a Cuban friend and a black friend and another Asian guy and somebody from Africa. And
it's very normal. And
yeah,
I was in Orlando and it's even like almost like half as much as Miami.
For
Miami's
sure.
like way intense compared to Orlando.
It's the melting pot of the United States.
Yeah.
It's such an interesting place to grow up. And I'm so glad I had the opportunity to grow up there because growing up, I thought that was the norm. Whenever you go
yeah.
past Orlando, really, it's not like that anymore.
No.
You know,
Florida is the only state where the more north you go, the more south you get.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. That's so true.
Yeah.
But so I, you know, as a good Asian kid, you kind of have to, your parents like, are like, all right, what are you going to play, the piano or the cello?
I was wondering.
It's like, you know, I think it's funny when people like do stereotypes or get mad at stereotypes because stereotypes are there for a reason, you know?
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm a terrible driver and and I'm pretty good at math. Like, I can, that's why I'm good at music is because I can count to four real good and then to six sometimes.
Yeah. Seven if you're getting wild.
So, yeah, if you get wild, yeah. But yeah, I grew up playing piano since I was, my mom put us in piano lessons since I was like five or six,
sweet.
You know? And growing up, you kind of graduate or you realize that the piano doesn't get the girls and it's not the coolest instrument. It is nowadays, especially if you're like into producing and stuff like that. But so I obviously,
not in the 90s,
right? Not in the 90s. Everybody wanted to play Nirvana and all this other stuff. So I started playing guitar when I was maybe 12 or 13.
Cool.
And then, you know, if you play guitar, you can kind of fumble on the bass. And there was actually a couple years where I primarily just played bass just because it was like the need. There was too many guitar players and keyboard players. And
story of the world.
Yeah, story of the world. Exactly. So I started playing music very early on. My family actually moved to Charleston, South Carolina when I was like 15,
okay.
which is a whole different culture shock from Miami because like I was the only Asian kid, you know, in Charleston and there's only white or black people. So I kind of had an identity crisis when I was like 15 I just didn't know which group I really belonged in. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of put one foot in one and another foot in the other. And so I played black gospel for years, and I played in the country band for years. And so I kind of got a taste of a little bit of both.
That's good, though.
But also growing up, my mom was very, very strict in the Christian faith. Mm-hmm. And so we would only listen to Christian music. So I grew up with like ZZ Talk, Jars of Clay, Newsboys, all that stuff, where most of my friends grew up with like, you know, like AC/DC and their dads.
That's me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I kind of wish I had grown up a little bit like that and been cultured, but at the same time, like, you know, it's made me the person I am now. And
you're quite all right for
yeah,
it.
And, you know, I used to sneak, you know, the Ludacris and Ja Rule and all that kind of stuff too. But so I sometimes I'm like, yeah, man, I really wish I knew what they were talking about when they talk about like, the, you know, Tom Petty and all this stuff, and their dads would listen to, but I don't know. It's kind of cool that I can still know what Cademan's Call is and
that's funny.
And all these other, you know,
obscure,
yeah. Yeah, White Heart and Petra, Carmen.
See, all that's like, yeah. Way past, yeah. I would love to go back. I always love to hear what were some of the band names that you were a part of.
Oh, gosh.
This is the best.
I was actually talking about this with a couple guys this afternoon. I used to be in this band called Deluxe Sports Car.
Nice.
We were just kind of...
Lawyer Rock?
Yeah, Lawyer Rock. I guess, yeah, pretty much. I was in a band called The Alibi, which was a hardcore band.
Oh, sweet.
We were kind of like the poor man's Under Oath.
Lots of chugs.
Oh, yeah. I've been in a band called Crowfield that was a country band. And then, of course, you have to get the terrible Christian name. So I was in a band called Declare. Oh, terrible. Christian rock. But,
yikes.
Yeah.
That's good. So... when you were growing up at that point, what hit you and made you think, yeah, I want to do music. This is it. Because you went from kid playing piano, picking up guitar and doing the band thing for a while. Was it obvious or, you know, what did that look like, that transition?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of both. I think so. I growing up, I had developed this thing in my left leg called Perthes. And I used to limp really bad, and my hip used to hurt. My left hip used to hurt, and I used to be in a lot of pain playing sports. Mm. And I love sports to this day. Like, I'm a huge NBA, NFL fan. But I just could not participate in any of those sports for very long periods of time. Mm. And I think, you know, I believe the Lord kind of pushed me in that direction, saying, I don't think I would have pursued music as hard if I had been good at those other things.
On the table, basically. Yeah.
And, you know, naturally, I was just kind of good at it. And so it was just kind of like a thing that I just kind of fell into that, like, hey, we know you can do this, so do this. And then, so I think it was a little bit of both that I kind of fell into it. And also, I was just kind of good at it, you know?
So I don't know anything about your route to getting to here. So did you do a traditional music school, or like, what was your route to getting to Louisville, Kentucky, Miami?
Yeah, so grew up in Miami. Like I said, I grew up in those very ethnic, multicultural background. And then I actually used to play a lot of, like, we used to play at Spanish churches.
Sweet.
And stuff like that down there, and got into that, you know, where every
reggaeton
song,
church.
Reggaeton church, which is awesome. And then getting to Charleston, which is very black gospel, soulful. And then quite the opposite, which is like, you know, kind of country kind of worship. And then like the whole CCM crowd.
That was going on still at the time.
Yeah, right? Yeah, for sure. For sure. It looked a lot different, but it's kind of weird. This is a free side tangent, but it's kind of funny in the last couple of years how like Christian bands, there's still like Christian bands out there. But back in like the 90s, they were like primarily Christian bands on CCM radio. where now it's kind of like more towards like worship stuff on the radio.
Correct.
You know?
Yeah. Which there's not like bands.
Yeah. Like you don't hear of like a Newsboys or DC Talk. I'm sure they're out there, and there's, you know, semi bigger stuff like Casting Crowns still and stuff like that around. Yeah. But it's just interesting to me how
it's almost hangovers of that previous generation rather than new stuff.
Just an interesting how that and I mean, we could get deeper into stuff like the monetization of worship music, which can be kind of sketchy in my eyes, you know. Which I guess that could be for another podcast, but but where were we at? I'm sorry. Growing up in Charleston, kind of learning that kind of music, I started going to a church, like kind of one of the bigger churches in Charleston called Seacoast. Okay. And they were actually kind of one of the churches to like pioneer multi-site, multi-campus. In Charleston, it's very hard to like build anything because everything's so historic. And so
the codes are outrageous.
Yeah. And like you can't expand on any buildings and stuff like that. And so they were kind of forced into like a lot of different campuses around the city and pioneering that kind of thing. I remember just because they had to. Yeah. I remember like they recording the sermon from one service and literally driving it on a disc to the other campus.
Mission Impossible Church.
Yeah, and like if the the runner was like just like 5 minutes late, they'd have to like go back into another song. Yeah. it was another bridge.
Awesome.
Yeah, another bridge. Let's take it to the bridge. But going through that, and then one of my really, really best buds, Micah Nichols, and I kind of got involved. I was going to Charleston Southern University in Charleston on a religion degree. And, and we would, I can't even remember how we got connected, but we got connected to Elevation Church in Charlotte. And we started, we would drive up every weekend and play there.
You and your friend.
Come back. Yeah. And we did that, I think, for a whole year. I did that until I graduated college. And then I actually, the day I graduated college, I moved up to Charlotte and was part of Elevation for years. And then through all that, we had some kind of some weird times in my wife and I's life with a miscarriage and stuff like that. And we moved to Atlanta. And then she was the one that found a posting for this job. And it was kind of exactly what I want to do as a music director. And I've been doing music directing, you know, at Elevation and at North Point in Atlanta. And so, yeah, it just kind of worked out and fell in my lap. And yeah, I've loved it. I've been here for almost 3 years now, and it's been a great experience.
What were some different things about those previous roles? Is it just kind of moving up the responsibility ladder, or you said exactly what you were looking for as far as music directing? So what was different than kind
of? It's funny because I think this question comes up in not necessarily how you asked it, but a lot of people, because I've been a part of three or four of these really big churches, they always ask, like, who's better? Like, is Elevation better? Is North Point? Is Seacoast? And I was part of New Spring for a while, and then here at Southeast.
Some heavy hitters.
Some really, really, like, over, most of them are over 20,000 members. So they're really, you know, mega Walmart type churches that are, and they always ask me like, who's better? And I really think that, it's apples and oranges. Like they're all fruit. And, like it really depends on your preference of where you are in life. Because I really like the church Southeast that we're at right now.
Yeah.
It's very family focused and, there's just a lot of things that we like about where we're at right now in this church, and not that any of those other churches, it's just a different flavor.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You know, and one's an apple, one's a banana, and they're just different colors.
You know? I was just wondering if you had gone from like a role, like a similar role, what were some of the responsibilities that changed, or more was it more of like you said, the fit of like the culture of the whole church you were coming to?
Sure.
Or both, or what?
Yeah, it was I think it was a little bit of both. It was the culture of each of those places were a lot different. Mm-hmm. Here we primarily use a lot of volunteers. We're at Elevation, and actually the other churches were contract bases for musicians and stuff like that. And that's, you know, there's no hiding that or anything. They're not.
Yeah, it's just it is what it is.
It is what it is. And so I think that culture was I've had to shift to that. And there's just a different level of different things, good or bad, you know. But yeah, that's been the main thing. You know, I've always kind of worked with Ableton for years and mm-hmm. kind of done tracks and musician development and stuff like that. But even more so here, for sure.
Because it's so much volunteer based.
Yeah, and, exactly.
So that would be a good transition then is like, what does a week look like? Because I think the average person, especially the average church member, probably comes and recognizes a lot of the faces that are on stage, because it's usually a similar cast of characters, even the volunteers, right?
Yeah.
So when they see behind, what does a week look like? And when, you know, maybe the teenage version of you is wondering, what is Larry going to be doing on a whole week? So what roughly, I know it's probably pretty flexible, and especially right now.
Yeah.
But what does a week look like as far as like meetings and creating tracks and all the different things that you have to do?
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's a lot different than previous churches. It's almost half of kind of a music director role, and then I would consider myself like pastoral role as well.
Cool.
So like like starting on a Monday was kind of where we start, because you know, like Sundays are usually our Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And this is also different because of Corona. But how it used, I'm gonna go back to how it used to be as far as schedule. So Monday's usually like first thing, we get our staff together and we kind of review the whole weekend first and just kind of give reports of what things went well, when things went bad, like what can we change to make either things better.
Is that all staff or is that like all
that's just
production?
The worship staff. Okay. Just worship staff. And so we'll get together. It's I think we have about 12 worship leaders on staff here, and so we'll all get together and kind of evaluate, which is kind of like the first half of the meeting. And then the second half of the meeting is kind of planning for the next coming weekend. And usually that eats up the entire morning, just, you know, with planning and stuff like that. Well, usually most people that can go, we'll all go as a worship staff to lunch. Mm-hmm. Just to, because when you're at a multi-site church, that these Monday and Tuesday are probably the only times we'll get to see each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to, as best can, like, keep closely aligned with each other and, you know, develop relationships with the other worship leaders and stuff like that. And so Monday's afternoon will actually turn into a little bit more of that planning for me, like the fine details, like, are we going to do a down chorus before this song?
Yeah.
If there's going to be a moment here.
That's where you kind of niche down into your...
Exactly. Thing. Yep. And so we've kind of already laid out the vision of like, these are the main points that we want to hit. And then I'll kind of get together with maybe one or two of the other worship leaders and really bounce some ideas off about like, if we want to nail down this moment or this song transitioning into this song, what would that look like? Mm. And that usually is all... So Monday's really a lot of planning.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday is really when I start to get into like the nitty gritty of making loops and tracks in Ableton and stuff like that. And that usually takes, you know, most of my Tuesday up with getting everything on Planning Center, like making sure chord charts and MP3s and practice tracks are up. And depending on the set list, that could take all day or that could take just like, you know, half an hour or an hour.
If you already had it ready.
Exactly. And throughout those, usually Tuesdays and Wednesdays are the times that I try at lunchtime to get together with one of our other musicians or something like that, one of our volunteer musicians, and kind of pour into them, go to lunch or something like that. And just, you know, be very relational.
Hmm.
And so Tuesdays and Wednesdays are usually like that. I try to have my my clicks and loops and everything up by Wednesday at lunch, so that the production team can put like automated lyrics to it and anything that they need to do with it, if they need to mix it some more, and
kind of bounced over to them at that point. The baton is passed.
Exactly. Yeah. And then right now Thursdays are kind of my original day for originals. So I've been really working on, we have a couple originals that are coming out here soon. We've been playing one called Run to Your Name that's been like hitting really, really hard with our church.
Yeah.
And it's been super awesome to see how that's developed. So we've got a couple more in the works. And usually on Thursdays, I really dive into those like all day long from morning till afternoon. And then usually Fridays and Saturdays I'm off. That's family time. And then Sunday's Super Bowl.
Yep.
So we get up really early and
do the thing.
Yep.
And currently that's two services, but before that was three.
It was one on Saturday. And so my Thursdays usually would have gotten adjusted there. It's really nice being at this church, that this church really values family and family time for us that are on staff, and I've really enjoyed that. Other places will just work you to the bone, and you know, but this place is very family oriented.
That original time, you're co-writing some, you're taking stuff other people have written, you're writing stuff. What is that day? What might you be doing in that day?
Well, what's awesome is in this past year, and in this Corona time, we've kind of established we're trying kind of this new process out where we've got a lot of the worship leaders here are writing music.
Mm.
And before this, I was kind of just getting like songs just thrown at me like all the time. And I'd work on a little bit and we wouldn't do it. And we'd work on another one
and
not get finished, and it'd be incomplete sentences. Where now we've established this songwriting committee, panel, whatever you want to call it, and all the songs that these worship leaders write will go into a Dropbox, and the songwriting panel, we listen to all of them together, and we kind of like pick them apart a little bit and say, man, this is really awesome with this song, and this song could use some help. And then by the time our meeting's done, we've figured out what's the next one song. Our church motto is one, and it's one person at a time. And so we've kind of docked that up with songs too.
Don't get over your head.
We want to put all of our eggs in one basket. And so we've not saying that those other songs that didn't get picked aren't going to be the ones next, but what is the one that is for our church right now and the one that's going to hit? And also like, a lot of songs are a lot farther than others, and so sometimes we'll go back to the writers and be like, hey, we really like this part. This part needs to be a little like refined and tuned a little bit more. So it's been really cool just to be able to have a singular thing that I'm working on, and I'm working on this one song, and knowing that also this song is probably, unless, you know, I really, really mess it up, it's going to be a song that we're going to be singing on the weekend.
Yeah, and it's going to be full production.
It's going to be full production. And
just a lot better than 10 songs that may not even get done.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think this process has really helped me hone in on one single song and put my all into one song. And then the next one, and the next one. And then hopefully we'll have, you know, a bunch compiled, and then we'll do like a live record or something like that.
That'll be sweet. So. And I think those other songs, there's something good about getting it out, writing it, put it in the crock pot. If it's meant to come out later, it will.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. And I keep telling these people that, like, even though you wrote the song, it's not going to go in vain, you know?
Even the practice of it.
One of my guys that I've been fortunate enough to play along with, John Mark McMillan, he writes a song like almost every day.
And
300 of those, or more than 300, nobody will ever hear. But it's just the muscle you have to continue to practice. And songwriting is just like anything else. Like, the more you do it, the better you can get it. You're not going to like write a song and then all of a sudden it's going to be What a Beautiful Name. You know, it's going to be years and years and tries and tries. And And in this process, which has been good too, is that like the cream will rise to the top. And so if it's a good song, it doesn't really need all this drums and guitars and stuff on it and everything just to make it like...
The bones should be good.
And I shouldn't have to come and put lipstick on a pick. You know what yes, I mean? Like,
totally.
It needs to be like...
Could you play it acoustic and the message get across?
Yes. And will those melodies sing? And will this, like, will everybody else want to sing it without... And then when we put drums and bass and guitars and all kinds of...
It'll be great.
It'll be even better. And it just takes it that extra 10%. But if you start with a good song, it's going to, you know...
Yeah.
Not saying that we can't mess up that last 10%, but if the bones are
easier to work with.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Cool. On a totally kind of different tangent, you told me a little bit before that you've been, I don't know how long you've been doing this, but you've been in the sync licensing and creating music for different placement and stuff like that. So how long have you been doing that?
Yeah. I've only been doing it for probably 4 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of stumbled upon it because a friend of mine in Charlotte, who's actually in Seattle now, he's really, really deep into the music bed thing. And one day we just wanted to do like a collaboration. He's an amazing drummer. And I sent him a bunch of, you know, just unfinished tracks. And he kind of ran with it.
Sweet.
And he put drums on it and he got a vocalist on it. And that's been, you know, pretty profitable just for like little lunch money, gear money.
Yeah,
you know?
That's great.
But it's definitely, if I had more time and wasn't working full time at the church, like I would definitely dive into that stuff, which is incredible. If you can, obviously it's not the most stable thing.
No.
But if you have enough in your catalog, it can be.
Yeah. I listened to, there's another podcaster and he talked about, he tries to get, and it seems like Grey's Anatomy is like everybody's like golden cow.
Sleeping Alaska's.
Yeah, he's milking that, man.
Millions of them.
Yeah, but it's crazy that whole like, I don't know, almost like a lottery or like a jackpot kind of feel of like putting it out there. But for somebody who has no idea, and we've totally put the cart before the horse, can you explain a little bit about what that is to someone who might have no idea?
Well, let's just say a wedding blogger or a wedding videographer. A lot of the money we make come from this kind of stuff, or a commercial or a local commercial or something like that. Whenever they're looking for music to put behind a lot of this stuff, they're not going to go and just pull something off of iTunes. They're going to want to get something that they can actually get the license from first without having to ask Beyonce to use it, you know.
Because she's not going to say
yes. She's probably not going to say yes, especially if it's just like a wedding video, you know, local wedding video. And so there's a catalog full of just music and every kind of style from country to folk to hip hop to EDM. And you can just, a lot of these wedding videographers or stuff will go on to musicbeds.com and look for a certain genre or something that's going to go really well with their video. Usually it's, it works that they have something first and then they're trying to put something music to it rather than like start the song and then, you know, they
give
put the,
them this artistic
right,
vision.
Exactly. Yeah. So with that being
that
in
be
the
more
back
like
of your mind,
cinematography kind of route.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And then they actually, if it's like a huge company like Coke or, I know a buddy that got with Spanx. It's like the women's.
Good for him.
And actually Spanx came back and asked him, you know, cause they wanted less horns in it or something like that, and
sure,
he actually
Spanx
went back yeah
whatever you say
so that they can
take that
can
underwear
actually,
money
exactly so they can actually go back to the artist and they can customize it, you know, a
so
little
they can
bit
run
more.
It on a commercial
so run it on a commercial, and that's when you get really into the big money,
because
actually as many, if you, let's just say you get like a huge endorse or Coke uses, every time Coke uses it you'll get paid, rather than like if a videographer uses it once or twice, you're only going to get a certain amount, you know. And
they might buy like the license outright,
right?
So
exactly.
It's done, it really is done,
exactly,
when they do that.
So there, there's two ways that they can, like you said, buy the license outright and they own that song, or they can just license it as far as like they're just going to use it and somebody else can use it too, like a royalty.
Cool.
So yeah, it's a little tricky game. It's actually really, really hard right now to get on Music Beds, I believe, because there's so many people doing it. But there's other websites.
I'm sure it's even harder right now.
Oh yeah. Oh,
during all of this distance stuff.
And actually, the stuff that I've been doing, like, there's so much dream pop on there. Do you know what that is? Like, the real 80s rock kind of stuff. And there's a lot of hip-hop on there, a lot of EDM. But if you can find kind of the music that they're really, really looking for. The
unturned stone,
basically. Yeah, exactly. Like, if you're really good at, like, folky stuff with, you know, mix of this or whatnot, you're more likely to, you know, get picked up. And
because there's only so many of those tracks or whatever.
Anybody and their mom can make an EDM track, you know.
Yeah.
Not that
on
it's good
EDM Fruity track, Loops or whatever. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's cool.
But not everybody can pick up a mandolin and, you know, be Chris Thiele, you know.
No.
So.
No, they cannot.
Yeah, exactly.
They definitely cannot. Well, I've got a couple of new questions I'm ready to test out. You want to try these out?
Sure.
I know. I got to see that video of you playing that crazy organ in Poland, and that made me think, some of the weirdest / most unique places you've been able to play music?
Well, that one probably has to top it to me. I've played a lot of organs in my life, but this organ, I think, was over 100 years old, and it literally was probably the size of my house. It was, I think we were in Warsaw, we were playing with my church. We were opening up for this awesome band, and we were playing in this old church, and they had this organ. I can't remember who, but I got to play this organ, and literally you could just play one note, and they had, you know, the whole bass pedals on the floor. If you could just play like an E flat with your feet and an E flat, just one note on the actual keyboard, it just massive. It was the whole place shook. And E flat, you know, is like kind of like a brown note, so it just kind of, but it was
like shaking
everything. Yeah. It was just amazing, just playing that thing. And I've never played an instrument that big, the size of a house, for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, that probably tops it.
What are some of the other like highlight reel as you look back, not even just at Southeast, but through your career? What have been some of the moments that you look back and you're like, man, that was cool. That was fun. So you can brag a little bit.
I hate this.
It can be the people that you enjoyed being around and playing with.
Yeah, I think the one of the biggest crowds I've ever played in front of, and probably the most nervous I've been in, was the first time I played Creation Fest in Pennsylvania. I don't even know where in Pennsylvania it is, but I think there was close to like 35,000 people there or something like that. And playing in front of that many people at one time, I just was like, oh my gosh. And I was the only guitar player. And it was like guitar player, bass player, drummer, and then the worship leader. And I was like, well, like, there's only another rhythm section in me, you know?
Don't
Which
screw up.
Is why I love The Edge, is because it's like he's
bare bones.
He's bare bones, and he's covering so much territory. But that was really cool. And I got to do it with two of my best friends.
Yeah.
And actually one of them is my brother-in-law. So.
Lastly, when you're in a creative rut, when you can't get the juices flowing, what do you like to do to kind of get re-inspired?
I actually have this, if I see something or hear something on TV or listening, you know, to, just random music on the internet or something like that, I'll actually try to record it with my phone. And so if there's going back to Grey's Anatomy, if there's like a cool band that I've never heard of off the outro of Grey's Anatomy or something like that,
Shazam it or whatever,
just Shazam it, or just like record it on my memos. And I have probably 30 of those right now. And obviously when I get inspired from it, I'll probably delete it later, you know, just to not go back to it. But there's multiple beats that I just like, man, that beat is tight. I want to play something on that. And so I'll kind of go through those, and usually something will pop out. I kind of will actually go through, I'm a big Omnisphere guy, for synth and keys and stuff like that. So actually a patch or a synth will actually inspire me pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So I'll just go through one and just, you know, just play C, 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 C through all through them. And most of the time I'll hear something that I'm like, oh, yes, that's dope.
Yes.
And then, you know, it's a little harder on guitar because you're kind of usually using the same kind of tone. But on keys, it's pretty easy because you can just switch up your tone and
immediately be worlds different.
Like, oh, man, I just jumped into the 70s. Yeah. You know? Yeah. But yeah, exactly. You play good old clavinet. Yeah,
that's cool. Kind of to round out the last couple of questions, let's say you're talking to, I don't even know, there's so many people at this church. So let's say there's a teenager who thinks they want to be doing something like you're doing. What would you tell them as they're growing up and getting towards graduating high school to inspire them, to encourage them for whatever that path might be? Like you said, even if that's finding their voice, right?
Sure. Don't go to college.
Yeah. Actually, drop out of high school.
No, don't drop out. Yeah, you need high school. But no, I think if you know that you're going to want to be a full-time musician, a worship leader, or work for a church or something in that kind of field, college really is not going to
necessarily do anything
for you. Now, if you were wanted to be a doctor and forever you wanted to be a lawyer and you growing up and you wanted to be a politician, like to college.
They frown on that when you practice medicine without a degree.
Exactly. Oh yeah, big time.
They frown on that.
But you know, you think about anybody that's probably done anything in music, most of the time they haven't gone to college or they went to college for like a year and dropped out, you know, like John Mayer or something like that.
Yeah.
But the best thing to do if you want to be an excellent musician is practice. Mm. Just do it. You know, a lot of times I tell some of these up and coming MDs, music directors, that like the best way to become a good MD is just to MD. Like that's just being in those situations where everything goes awry and
you're making those
decisions those decisions, because you can't really recreate those or be in those situations with, you know, unless you're in them. So I would say that. And also you kind of have to look at it like there is no plan B.
Yeah.
If you're going to want to do music, like you got to jump in full feet and you got to commit to it. And you're going to be like, listen, I'm going to be poor for a while. But you know, eventually I'm going to break through and I'm going to be able to make a decent living for my family.
Yeah.
And you know, there's other sides to that. You got to be good and you have to be called, within, you know, I believe the Lord.
Yeah.
But
even if someone doesn't believe that, you have to have this path.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And if you're young and you're 15 or all the way till 25, take every gig you can. Even if it's a gig that you're probably going to hate, like you'll learn stuff out of that experience and you'll learn what you hate also.
Yeah, that's very good.
Yeah. And you also learn, like to learn, see, man, I really hate that, but I really love this aspect of it. And I think if you know that it's kind of a backup plan and you're just playing music for fun on the side, it's not going to work out. You have to jump in full force. You're going to have to, I couldn't tell you how many tours I've done across this country in a 15 passenger van. Mm. Now I wouldn't do that anymore because I'm just to the point where I'm like, it's not worth it for me, you know, and I got a family and I'm not going to be gone for 2 months in a 15 passenger van with a bunch of hot, sweaty dudes.
Yeah.
But if I was 18, 19, like you've got to have those, you got to cut your teeth somewhere.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think that's, you just got to do it, and there can't be any kind of plan B. Just, if you're going to do it, jump in full, both feet into it, and
there's too many people that are hungry that'll go right past you.
Yeah. Well, I meet so many of these kids that like, man, I really, really want to do what you do, but also they're not taking any active steps to do it. They're just like, man, I'm just going to do this other thing. Like, no, dude, like, quit that thing. Even if you have to eat ramen noodles and crackers, like, go somewhere and do it. Somewhere that will have you and cut your teeth and, you know, you're just going to get better and better and better. Yeah. And then eventually you're going to do it.
I like it, man. Well, to round out the last two questions I always ask everybody is the how and the why. So there's the practical of how you inspire people to make more music, and then there's the philosophical of why does it matter to you? So you can take it in whichever order you want. But
sure. I think, well, obviously being a Christian, I believe that a lot of that philosophy is ingrained into just Christian culture, and just being a Christian is, I believe I was created on this earth to make music specifically for the Lord.
Absolutely.
And to make music for other believers to worship the Lord. Granted, I played cover music and cover bands and stuff like that for years. And you know, I don't look anything on that. And like, it's so fun to be
able
to.
It's not like it's below anything.
Yeah, below it or anything. But I know that I was created to make worship music, and sing worship and play worship. And second half is.
Like, how? What does that look like to you in your, like, regular daily walk?
I think there's a natural, there's a God-given desire in us to want to worship something, whether that be God, whether that be money, whether that be, I don't know, anything, women, or whatever you want to
put
in.
People crave things.
People crave things.
Yeah.
And I think if you can direct that to music, worship, that's how you're really going to develop that passion, and that's how you're going to be able to do it.
Boom.
Without the want and drive to do something, you're just going to be, you know, just a mediocre, whatever, I think.
Or chasing the wrong thing.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I always love it whenever I see sports, like LeBron James or somebody like that, and they always do those post game interviews, and all of them say the exact same thing. Like, I'm just here so I can get better, and you know, like,
yeah,
next time we're gonna.
It's like, why are we even showing
this? Everybody says the same, like, PC, same thing, you know, like, we're just out here just trying to get better and better.
Well,
you know?
They ask the same questions, oh, too. Yeah. The questions are just as bad,
yeah. Exactly.
So that shot, huh?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Exactly.
We're just putting our best foot out there, you know, man.
Exactly.
Every day, grind every day.
Yep, grind every day. Every day, we're just getting better. But there is something to that, whereas I think as a musician, you kind of have to keep that in your mindset, too. Like, I'm going to try to, you'll never be the perfect musician. You can always, there's always room for improvement. Mm. And I think what's...
that fragile musician ego.
Oh, yeah, for you know? Sure. And I think some of the best musicians know their lane for sure. Like, they know that, like, I this is kind of my sound, but also being cultured in a lot of other stuff. So I'll listen to, I remember when we're in Poland, you know, Chopin is from there. So I just just devoured Chopin's catalog. And then I love country music. I love rap. I love, you know,
indie rock. It's at Miami.
Oh, yeah. It's at Miami. But I think you need to be kind of well-rounded. I remember back in the day, I'm also a UFC fan. And back in the day, that they used to just, like, either you were a boxer, they were like, man, we're going to have a boxer, and then he's going to fight this jiu-jitsu guy.
Yeah.
And they would fight it out. But nowadays, like, all the fighters have to be so well-rounded. Mixed, you got to know, you got to know wrestling, you got to know Muay Thai. And I think it's the same thing with a musician, especially a young musician that's coming up. Like, you don't know what kind of job you're going to get thrown.
Yeah.
So you could be thrown into a country gig, or you could be thrown into, like, a hip-hop gig. And just being well-rounded and not being closed-minded as far as, like, man, I am a country guitar player and I do chicken picking. Whereas, like...
Might not eat.
Yeah, you might not eat. Whereas I think you can have, like, I lean a little bit more towards, like, that post indie kind of rock, kind of, you know, ambient kind of stuff. And I know my lane for sure, but I also like to dabble in other stuff.
Yeah.
Just so you never know what will come up and...
Keeps you fresh, too.
Keeps you fresh and... even if the stuff, I don't believe that there are, like, terrible types of music.
Correct.
I think there's terrible people playing that type of music.
Boom.
But there's, like, there's absolutely, people are like, oh, hey, country. Well, you probably haven't listened to really, really good country.
Yeah.
You know? Or, and there's something in every genre, if the best of that genre is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, whether that be jazz or rock or something like that, it's just... The people you're listening to are probably not the best at that genre.
That's something that, as a, like, egocentric teenager, going into music therapy now and seeing, like, working with people and seeing people have actual life change and, you know, do things like go through recovery and because of a Nickelback song. Yeah. And me as like a teenager, I would have been like, lame. Yeah. But like now it's like, oh, like I'm starting to get the like cultural significance of like, even if I think it's super stupid, you know, whatever it is, it's funny to see like Florida Georgia Line, how much that means to someone or, you know, things like that. So
as long as there's people that like, you know, going to the beach and partying on the beach, there will be more Florida Georgia Lines. Yeah, exactly.
They multiply.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, me growing up in Miami and just being like seeing what makes different races and different social economic and different, different people tick per se. I think I appreciate different, like, I don't hate on Florida Georgia Line at all because, like, yeah, I like being on the beach too.
Hey, it's pretty great. Yeah,
and I don't want to be listening to like the hardcore on the beach. You know, I want to listen to Jack Johnson on the beach. But if I'm working out, I want to throw on that
Thrice.
Yeah. So I think it's just music for different, you know, different situations.
Yeah.
Not that any of it's bad.
No. Cool. Well, this has been an awesome chat. We'll have to round back again, or maybe do some extra stuff later for our controversial take on Christian consumerism.
Oh yeah, for sure.
we'll do that later.
Yeah,
but where would you like people to find either you or what the church is doing? What would you point people to resource wise?
Sure. So my Instagram handle is Larry Sing SING Tran TRAN. I don't actually sing, but my it's a Chinese middle name. Larry Sing Tran TRAN at Gmail. Nope, that's my email. Don't email me.
We'll cut that out.
Yeah. No. Larry Singtran is my Instagram handle. And then the church I'm working at is Southeast Christian Church, and our worship ministry is Awaken Worship. And you can find that, you know, on all the platforms.
Yeah, and there's music on Spotify and Apple
Music.
Yep,
Spotify, Apple Music, all that.
Cool. All right, man. Well, for Larry, for Chris, everybody, give more grace, share more love, and make more music.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that chat with Larry Tran. And if you did, you can find all the information in the show notes about him, Southeast, Awaken Worship, and their music. And check out stuff from our sponsor, Caulfield Cables. If you want to get in touch with me, you can always do that by reaching out on Instagram at make.more.music or send me an email at makemoremusicpodcast@gmail.com. Other than that, before we get out of here today, I have a new music shout-out. All right. Today, our new music shout out is from somebody I found on Instagram through actually the Tone Mob podcast, my friends over there at Tone Mob, Blake and his crew. And somebody had actually taken a sample and done some tape looping. And that's part of the rabbit hole that sent me down getting into tape loops, which I hope to discuss in a future episode. So this guy's name is Heavy Bones. His name's Matt, and he goes by Heavy Bones, and he is from, I believe, Australia. And Heavy Bones is a solo project that focuses on atmospheric instrumental composition. And he started this project after a long break from music in the 2013-2018 era, and just kind of spent some time as a session guitarist and started to branch out and get into the world of synths and composing. So right now, before he releases his first album, this track, Thaw, is a cue for an unreleased short film that he scored. So he has piano loops and a granular sampler. He's using some Spitfire Audio Labs, which he says he uses heavily on all his projects. It started out sparse, but really he calls it Thaw because the way that the bass drone eventually shifts to a second note reminded him of something melting away and leaving something new and unencumbered to grow, a thawing. So thanks for checking this out. Remember, give more grace, share more love, make more music, and here is Thaw by Heavy Bones.